Welcome to American Rhapsody, the Briscoe Center for American History's podcast. Our main gallery exhibit, History and Fate, The Goodwins in the 1960s, showcases the entwining stories of the political turbulence of the decade and the romance between political speechwriter Dick Goodwin and presidential historian Doris Kearns Goodwin. Kearns Goodwin visited the Briscoe Center earlier this year, and while in conversation with Briscoe Deputy Director Aaron Purdy, talked about one of the key items in the exhibit, Lyndon Baines Johnson's We Shall Overcome speech.
You alluded earlier to some of Kennedy's work regarding the civil rights movement. Obviously, we can't talk about the 1960s without delving into that. And I'd like to point out in particular Bloody Sunday, March 7th, 1965, a group of peaceful protesters trying to gain voting rights in Alabama, led by John Lewis, were met by horrible police brutality. And that motivated Johnson to give a speech that became known as We Shall Overcome, one of the most important speeches in American history. Tell us the story of how Dick came to write that speech.
You know, what had happened is that Johnson had thought that he would wait until 1966 at first for voting rights because the country needed to absorb the Civil Rights Act, and he had all the Great Society legislation to get through. But he understood that once that imprint of those Alabama state troopers going after the peaceful marchers who were marching from Selma to Montgomery to protest all the devices that were being used against African Americans to not allow them to register to vote. You had to come in only maybe one day a month, and you had to recite the 13th Amendment, the 16th Amendment. You had to say how many seeds there were in a watermelon, how many jelly beans in a jar, unanswerable questions. And as a result, in Selma, even though 55% of the citizens were blacks, only 2% were registered. So Johnson understood once those images were captured on television that something would happen to the conscience of the American people, and he had to channel that moment. At that time, he was able to make a pivot from what he had expected and to go for voting rights right then. So he decided on a Sunday night that he would make the speech on Monday night. Normally for a joint session of Congress speech, you'll work on it for weeks. And Dick had only that one day from that morning at 9 a.m. until 6 p.m. to help write that speech. So he gets into the office and everything was in chaos. The night before, somebody had been there in the White House and Dick was having dinner with Arthur Schlesinger the night before. So it had been assigned to somebody else other than Dick. So when he got in the morning, that Jack Valenti was the one who did that. Johnson said, well, how's Dick Goodwin doing on the speech? He said, well, sir, I didn't assign it to him. You get him to write that speech. That's why he had only that day to do so. And at first he put his watch away. He figured if I put my watch away, I won't watch time passing somehow kind of crazily. And then he started to write. And he knew then, he told me, and all of us who are writers know, the hardest thing is to get the first line of anything, whether it's a chapter or a book or a speech. And he finally came up with a beautiful line, I speak tonight for the dignity of man and the destiny of democracy. I mean, just the rhythm of that, dignity of man and destiny of democracy. And then he went on, at times, history and fate meted. That's why history and fate, that's why the name of the exhibit, history and fate meted at a certain time in a certain place. And then he situated Selma in history. Dick always wanted, and so did Johnson, to make the sense of where you were connect to fuller history. So it was in Lexington and Concord. So it was at Appomattox. So it was in Selma, Alabama. And then he went on to say, this is not a Negro problem, not a white problem, not a Northern problem, not a Southern problem. It is an American problem. And we are met here tonight, not as Democrats, not as Republicans, to meet that problem. And then in the middle of the day, Dick took a break to smoke his cigar and take a walk outside. And he heard in the distance some people singing, We Shall Overcome. So he came back in, and that came the inspiration for what Johnson said. And he delivered it so perfectly. He said, but even if we get the right to vote, we still have to overcome, the entire country has to overcome, a century of bigotry and oppression. But if we come together, we shall overcome. And suddenly the House of Representatives, the congressmen, the senators realized that this extraordinary moment had happened where the anthem for the civil rights movement that had given courage to the freedom riders and the sit-ins and the marchers against segregation had been lifted to the highest councils of power. And that's when change takes place in the country, when an outside movement meets an inside power. And they leapt to their feet. Congressmen and senators were crying. And Dick was standing in the back of the well that night. He said, God, how I loved Lyndon Johnson that night. But that wasn't the end of it. Dick was not bothered by Johnson much of the night. He would send out the pages. Johnson would edit them. They'd come back. But he finally called him up at one point. He said, "You know, Dick, I'd like to talk about Cthulhu." And Dick knew what that meant because Johnson had told him about his experiences being a young teacher at Southwest State Teachers College, and he had to take a year off to make money, and he went to a small Mexican community in Cthulhu, Texas. And he told Dick, and he had told him before, that he'd seen the pain of prejudice on these kids' faces, and he couldn't do much for them. He could give part of his salary, which he did, to get sporting equipment, but he wanted to do so much more, and he couldn't. "But now maybe I can," he said to Dick. And so then a passage was written that he again delivered perfectly, saying, "When I was there in 1928, and I had these kids, and I couldn't help them, and I know the pain. When you see the pain of prejudice on a young kid's face, you never forget the scar that it leads." And then he said, "But now it's 1965, and now I am president of the United States, and now I have the power, and I intend to use it." It was great. It was a great moment of the speech, really. And much later, somebody saw a picture of Johnson when he was teaching these kids. You see this tall beanpole and all these little kids. And the person said to him, "Well, who wrote that speech?" And he said, "They did." And that was right, that experience in Cthulhu. And Dick said that was probably right. That's what created that compassion and that desire, which held Johnson the rest of his life to do something about civil rights.
So you were watching Johnson give this speech, and you were very active in the civil rights movement yourself. You went to the March on Washington, where Dick was as well that day, although of course you didn't know each other. What did the civil rights movement mean for you and your love of country? What was it like for you to watch that speech?
Oh, I was watching it with my friends, and just we had watched prior to that, the week before Bloody Sunday, and that night it was just so hard to believe that this was our country. It was such a sad thing to watch. And then there was a Reverend Reeb in Boston who had gone down to help the marchers and was killed by some Ku Klux Klan people, and we all marched into Boston for his argument, for his protest, his death. And then that night, when Johnson gave the speech, when it was over, and especially when that moment came of "We shall overcome," because I had been, when I was a 20-year-old, I was at that March on Washington, and it was probably the moment in my life, the first time I ever felt I was part of something larger than myself. I was carrying a sign, happily, "Protestants and Jews and Catholics unite for civil rights," and I was so proud to be there. And at the end, when we all sung "We shall overcome," even more, I think, than the words of Martin Luther King, to be holding hands and singing that song together, you felt you were part of something larger. I went back to my senior year in college, and I had majored in international relations, and I'd gotten a Fulbright to go to Paris. I changed my mind. I didn't want to go away. I wanted to be in America, where I could help in what was happening in the social movements of our country. So for me then, if I had ever imagined when I was listening to that speech that night, that several years later I'd be working for the president who delivered that speech, or that 10 years later I would meet and marry the man who helped to write that speech, I could never have imagined that.
History and Fate's runtime at the Briscoe Center has been extended through December 12, 2025. If you want more information, please visit briscoecenter.org. Visiting the exhibit is free and open to the public.